I'm Alexia Ridley with Athens News Matters, a show dedicated to local news, current events, and community outreach efforts. Today, my guests are candidates running for Athens-Clarke County Commission District 3. They discuss why they're running, unique challenges facing their district, and their plans to address concerns. All that and more next on Athens News Matters. Hello, I'm Alexia Ridley, host of Athens News Matters. My guests today are District 3 incumbent Commissioner Melissa Link and challenger Tony Eubanks. So thank you both for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Well, you're very welcome. And I will start with you, Melissa, to just tell us a little bit about your background. Tell us about yourself, how you got here.
Okay. Well, I'm the sitting commissioner for District 3, which is the district that includes downtown and our Prince Avenue and West Broad Corridor neighborhoods, Boulevard, Cobham, Hancock, Rock Springs, and it also creeps out into the suburbs and grabs some Vincent Drive area neighborhoods. I got into this as a community activist, a neighborhood activist. A little disappointed in the direction that Athens was going. And, you know, I was constantly showing up at meetings, all kinds of meetings, saying my piece and feeling like I wasn't getting heard. So I decided it was time to be heard. Now they have to listen to me.
Right. Being there, they listen. And Tony, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Well, I've been in Athens since 1980. I have an 11-year-old daughter. I've also been a community activist for a good 25 years or so. And I personally think that I'm running because I think that we need to do things a little differently in order to make the progress that I'd like to see us make.
And tell me a little bit about some of the challenges you think are facing District 3.
Well, I think that one of the big challenges we face, it's not unique to District 3, but I think one of the unique challenges we face is that we have probably the highest income inequality of any district in Athens. I would think so. And I don't know how we solve that, but I think that the way that we solve that is that we've got to get everybody to the table, whether you're rich, poor, black, white. Everybody's got to feel welcome, and everybody's got to have an opportunity to let themselves be heard. You know, this is not unique to Athens. It's not unique to District 3. And I don't claim to have a silver bullet. And I don't think there is a silver bullet. But I think that we do need to get everybody to the table. And I think that with my diversity of my background as a teacher, as a bar owner, a downtown bar owner, as a activist, as a longtime community member, I think I have connections to help facilitate getting those people to the table. I don't know. Maybe I do. Maybe I don't. But I think I've got. I'd like to try.
Right. And Melissa, what do you think are some unique challenges?
Well, I mean, the income inequality is certainly a huge challenge across the board in Athens-Clarke County. I mean, we have the statistics to prove it. And this district in particular, being that it is a very diverse district and it's, includes very much our in-town neighborhoods, that's where we're seeing our cost of living and especially our housing costs soar. And I think we can begin to tackle some of these income inequality problems through more equitable housing opportunities, more diverse housing opportunities, paying attention to creating new housing in desirable areas and areas that have access to transit and walkable communities, kind of diversifying our in-town housing base. And the underlying formula for all that is zoning. I'm kind of a zoning nerd. I used to go to planning commission meetings just for kicks and giggles long before I even thought about running for office. And I'm really looking forward to the opportunity with our new comprehensive plan coming online to take a new look at our zoning ordinances and really look at it from the perspective of equity across the board and opportunity for folks of all backgrounds in our community.
You know, you both mentioned this, but poverty, Athens has an extremely high poverty rate. One commissioner certainly can't fix that, but it's such a challenge. What do you see as some ways of possibly addressing it? And I'll start with you first on this one, Melissa.
Well, I really would like to see us embrace small business development more, entrepreneurship opportunities for folks that might not have the family connections and access to the loans and things to start those small businesses. Once upon a time, in neighborhoods that are now considered kind of degraded and that don't have as much opportunity, once upon a time, a lot of those neighborhoods were thriving communities in and of themselves. And I think we need to invest more in that kind of small, localized business, as well as your traditional luring larger companies that can bring good living wage jobs to the community. And we do have an economic development department now that is doing a pretty good job of at that. I'm actually pretty pleased with some of the progress we're starting to make there.
So progress sorely needed, of course. Mm-hmm. And Tony?
I think that making it a little easier for entrepreneurs to get off the ground is one thing. I've got we have so many mutual friends but we have friends who have started new businesses, and I've gone around and talked to quite a few of them. I'm like, what is the impediment to get you here? And you know, we get this reputation as not being business friendly, and I've never really bought into that. I think that the staff is quite helpful. I think what happens is sometimes you have an entrepreneur who is very good at what they do, and then they're going to go in and try and start a business, and that's a different aspect, and it's new to a lot of people, and they're having to learn the rules, and that can be frustrating. So I think that might be one thing. But while entrepreneurship is important, I think that you got to recognize that the majority of people are employees. The majority of people are going to be employees. And so I think that, I think that you have to find a way to work with some of our larger institutional employees and making sure that people on the lower scale, the lower wage scale, are earning a living wage. Athens-Clarke County has adopted a living wage. That's great. I think that you have to get University of Georgia to the table and say, hey, what can we do? How can we help these people that are working the lower end scale jobs and get them to a living wage? And I think that you don't do that by, you know, hey, you need to do that. I think you do that by saying, hey, can we sit down? Can we look at a way to address this? Can we look at incentives that the city might be able to provide? University of Georgia, the relationship between the University of Georgia and Athens is symbiotic. And I think that what's good for one can be good for the other. I think that sometimes what's good for one might not be good for the other. And I think that you need to point that out when that's the case. And I think that when you have people, I work at the university. I'm in the university and late at night, several nights a week. And, when you've got custodial staff there and they've come from another job, it's like, okay, so you're working how many hours a day? And how do you raise a family with that? So, I think it's fair to say, hey, let's sit down and talk about how we can work together to rectify this situation. Because when you got a 4% unemployment rate but a 30-something percent poverty rate, there's something out of whack there. Somebody's not getting paid enough money for doing whatever they're doing.
And this may seem totally obvious, but that living wage, like the county is doing it, what kind of a difference do you think that would have on people who are under that living wage and the rest of the community? Because it seems like it could spread out throughout the community if the tide rises.
Well, I think that one thing that you do is you get your parents and your grandparents who have more time to spend with their family, and that trickles down through, it provides a benefit in a myriad of ways. So it's not just the money, it's the time. I know that for me personally, I've kind of created a job for myself where I get to take my daughter to school. I get to pick her up from school. I get to participate in her school activities. Not everybody has that luxury. I worked really hard to create this job to be able to do that. But, so it's not just about the money.
Well, and studies show that in communities where they do enforce a living wage, it kind of trickles up throughout the economic spectrum. If your major employer is paying a decent wage, then it creates more competition for all the other employers and kind of forces them to pay higher wages in order to get those employees.
Lead by example.
Yeah, and across the board, studies show this. In communities where they have adopted a living wage, that's what happens.
We have that now in Athens-Clarke County. Melissa, are you seeing or hearing impacts from employees who have seen their wages rise?
I think that people are definitely feel a little more comfortable. But then again, our cost of living has risen as well. So I think that we need to reevaluate what it means to pay to have a living wage, you know, on a fairly regular basis, especially with housing costs going up as quickly as they are. You know, we are seeing that, you know, fewer and fewer people who work in Athens can afford to live in Athens.
You know, it's really, we lose a lot when the when the public servants can't afford to live in the community that they're serving.
Yeah.
You know, how many people in the planning department live in Jackson County, and how many of our school teachers live
Our police officers, not a whole lot of them can afford to live. Our teachers,
You know, I found it very interesting that at a commission work session the other night with the wage and salary study that we've hired a consultant to do a wage and salary study. And what is he finding? He's finding that there's a compression at the lower end. At the upper end, it's not as the disparity, we're competitive at the upper end. Mm-hmm. We're not so competitive at the lower end. But what I found is interesting about that is that this is 2018. What did he say the last study was done, 1995?
It was 20-odd years ago.
Yeah. So I along with you on that, that it's something that you constantly – it's not a thing that you fix and then it's fixed forever.
Yeah, and we actually had a work session last night where we had – kind of a little bit of a follow-up update on that. We haven't had the full report in yet, but in the budget talks, which are wrapping up over the next couple months, we're talking about beginning to address some of those lower wage disparities, and we are having a real problem retaining some employees, especially in public safety, and we need to keep our cops.
We train them, and then they go get a higher paying job somewhere else.
I mean, they can make more,
Gwinnett County.
Yeah, in Gwinnett County, or as a security guard in Atlanta, a lot of times.
So important, all the money and time invested in training someone. Mm-hmm. And public safety is unique. So if you get some good qualified people, you want to keep them.
Yeah, and ACCPD trains above the level of qualifications. We have well-trained officers.
Yeah, I'm real pleased with our police department leadership at this point. So.
Yeah.
I went through the simulator, and I agree. They are trained so well. They are really quite professional. They do such a good job. And Chief Freeman is very open and transparent. So I would say that he wouldn't shy away from the problems. He seems to be very open about them.
He is. He's very engaged.
So plug for ACCPD.
Woo. And Chief Freeman. And the senior staff.
Right, exactly, because they're all on board, so all working toward the same goal. So I just want to remind everyone today who we have on the show. We have District 3 Commissioner Melissa Link and Challenger Tony Eubanks today. And for both of you, you have a wide variety of issues and things that you're focused on. But I know, Tony, and Melissa, you are as well, you want to keep Athens bike and pedestrian friendly.
I want to
make
it bike and pedestrian friendly. So, Tony, we'll start with you. What are some ideas you have or strategies that you think we can adopt to get there?
The mayor appointed me to the Bike Ped Master Plan Citizens Advisory Committee. We've been meeting for about 19 months now, and I'm super excited. I'm as excited about this as I have been about anything in my advocacy for transportation issues. We have a great consultant at the Tool Design Group. They're awesome. They're responsive. They're creative. So I think that Bike Ped Master Plan is going to give us a blueprint to get us where we need to go. It's going to take money, but fortunately we passed TSPLOST. I'm proud of the role, and I know Melissa would have done more, that she was barred from, as a commissioner, from doing more for advocating it. But I'm proud of the role that I played in advocating for TSPLOST. I'm proud of the citizens of Athens-Clarke County for recognizing the opportunity that it presented and passing it not only in every commission district, but in every precinct in every commission district. It passed. So it was overwhelming. And we had a Bike Ped Master Plan meeting on Monday night. And one of the consultants who was in to work on the advocacy program and the educational and advocacy program said, you cannot overstate how important it is that you actually have money to implement at least some of the things that we're doing here. So I think it will be transformational.
And Melissa, well, you've been on the show before talking about this. I know you agree with Tony about getting Athens to where it needs to be, because Athens at one time was a leader, and then the progress stalled.
Yeah, we kind of started treading water somewhere.
I think we actually went under.
Yeah,
we lost
I think
our bicycle-friendly designation for several years.
And, you know, I about 4 or 5 years ago, I developed an inner ear condition where I'm not real steady on a bike anymore. And I don't feel safe riding on the streets in Athens. I go to places like Chattanooga or Washington, D.C., where they have actual protected bike lanes. And I do. I get to ride my bike. And it's something that I miss. You know, it's really sad to me. And my husband and I are a one-car family. I mostly get where I need to go walking and taking the bus. So I don't just talk the talk. I literally walk the walk. I mean, every day I experience what it's like to be a pedestrian and a transit rider. And, you know, I take that experience forward when making policy decisions and advising on policy decisions. And we do have a ways to go. We have made some progress in recent years, though. I've been kicking and screaming about pedestrian safety stuff from day one. And, you know, immediately my first year on the commission, we added an extra $250,000 to the budget to deal with some sidewalks and some crosswalks. And you know, we have gotten much safer crosswalks in areas where it was really scary. We certainly have plenty more areas where we need to enhance those. And we're making a lot of progress on the sidewalks, and T-SPLOST is going to help a lot.
Right. Well, and of course, through the work that I've been doing through Complete Streets Athens, you know, I'm going to take a little credit for our group's advocacy for that. It's becoming kind of standard practice to put in pedestrian islands now. We've got them on millage. We got, Prince was one of the last streets to get them. Prince Avenue was one of the last streets to get them. But we've got them on Gaines School Road in front of the school. We've got them on millage in front of the high school. We are getting another one lower down on millage. It's becoming a little bit more, hey, wait, this is the right way to do it. So, and once you get that kind of ingrained, then you're not fighting every little fight every time. And we also are, you know, we got the advanced pedestrian signaling is becoming a more standard thing. And that is where when you push the button at a crosswalk, you get a pedestrian walk signal while all directions are still red. So you get a chance to get out into the intersection before the cars have a chance to start moving. And that makes the pedestrians more visible. And that's a fairly low cost thing that works great. We actually went out and talked to some of the residents in the Green Hills neighborhood. And they were like, what can we do? And it's like, well, this is one thing that you can do that's low cost. And they got it. And they're like, hey, this is great. We can actually get out and people see us now. And so it's a little safer. And that's a low cost thing. So getting out of the box, looking at new tools, you know, now we just need to, now that we got some money, we need a plan and follow the plan.
Yeah. And I'm going to put a little plug in for zoning and design guidelines, too. You know, I feel like we could initiate some design guidelines, especially when it comes to larger scale development that is much more pedestrian friendly, including, you know, cut through passageways through large developments and things like that. I feel like we have a lot of large scale developments that almost act as gated communities and people have to go around them. I'm not going to name any names, but I think that we really need to reassess our zoning and design guidelines to really incorporate that kind of pedestrian and bike friendliness and connectivity throughout the community.
I don't know what you can do as a commissioner about this, but what role do you think does education play in pedestrian or bike safety? You know, we had a recent death of a UGA professor who was on the road and should have been safe, but someone following too closely, not giving that 3-foot clearance that mm-hmm. we're supposed to give bikers. You know, I assume everyone knows it, but
they also should know that it's illegal to text and drive in Georgia now.
Right.
You know, it's funny. We brought this up at our bike ped meeting on Monday night, and there's a large role to play in education. But a lot of that has to come from the state, because the state, you know, Tyler Dewey, who's, again, friends of both of ours, and he's also on the Bike Ped Master Plan Committee, he's talking about that Georgia Bikes has made PSAs for bike safety. You know, what are the rules of the road? And so they have these slick things, and they can't get them on the air. Mm-hmm. There's no budget. So that's where the state could come in. The one of the reasons that we chose Tool Design Group for the consultants is in addition to doing the bike ped master plan itself, they also folded in an educational component, and that's the report that we heard on Monday, the draft report that we heard on Monday. So there's a big role for education, both in terms of drivers and in terms of cyclists. Please, people, if you're riding a bike at night, turn your lights on.
Yes. Wear a helmet.
Right.
Signal.
But the bike lights is crazy. I've got one of the first 1,000 share the road tags from the state of Georgia when they started issuing those. I'm a bike advocate. I ride my bike to work every morning, and I can't. I mean, I just want to pull them over and say, here's a bike light.
So on both sides, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And as far as the pedestrians go, Robert. Head of Auxiliary Services from UGA is on, and all the UGA's buses have cameras. Mm-hmm. And he's got footage of students, no headphones, no phone, just walking down the street, and all of a sudden they just dart out and mm-hmm. get hit by a bus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've had, just recently I had a meeting with a couple of upper-level UGA folks to talk about how to get some of this education out to the students, because we have a whole new batch of them every year.
Every year.
I mean, we're very transient town, and it's, that's a big challenge, is educating new residents over and over and over again. And UGA is starting to, get a little better about that. They have this Beyond the Arch program, and I've offered to become more intimately involved in that and hope to educate UGA students, not just about traffic safety issues, but issues in our neighborhoods, too.
Well, as you say, you ride public transit fairly often. Do you see a need for expansion of the service, or, how is it operating in District 3? It seems like you have a pretty good area for public transit.
Yeah, we're really lucky. And I feel extremely lucky to live a block and a half off Prince Avenue, where there are literally 12 buses an hour going within a block of my house. And since UGA expanded the health sciences bus, it's really changed my life. And I can testify to what it's like.
Every 20 minutes.
Yeah. And ACC added another route along there, too. So, it is life-changing when you have that frequency of service. And
it goes where you want to go.
Yeah. From what I understand, that's the one thing that the main thing people would like to see is more frequent service.
And Tony, you bike to work a lot, so you both kind of take alternative transportation often.
Well, it's faster. For me, biking is faster, and you don't have to pay for parking. And that's one of the things I'm talking about partnering with UGA. And I think that UGA has done a really great job of trying to create a car-free campus, but there's still a lot of UGA employees and students who are used to driving in their car to work. I think the Greenway is going to open that up a little bit. We're going to mm-hmm. see a little decrease there.
But they're doing another parking lot off of College Station Road.
So, there is room to work together there. And I think that we are. I think that, in terms of the Robert Holden, Robert Holden, the head of Auxiliary Services, he's chomping at the bit to participate and bring this educational component of the Bike Ped Master Plan to campus. He doesn't want to invent something and then have it come, have the Bike Ped Master Plan come up with something a little different. So he's waiting and anxiously awaiting so that he can participate and take that from the city to the campus. And so that's the kind of partnerships that we need.
You both touched on this a little bit earlier, but housing costs in Athens, is that a particular challenge in District 3?
Yes, it's huge. I bragged that I think I got the last $120,000 house in Boulevard, and that was 15 years ago.
What year?
2002.
I beat you by 10 years, and it wasn't quite up to six figures yet.
Yeah, wow. I mean, my house is probably close to tripled in value, and it's still a little fallen in check.
But it's important.
Well, I've talked to realtors in our community, and there are two things that are driving housing prices, particularly in District 3. One is the success of Chase Street School, mm-hmm. and the other, different realtors put them one and two, but the other is that we've got walkable amenities. Yep. You know, we've got Hendershot's, the Bottle Works on the lower end. We got Normaltown on the upper end. We've got entrepreneurs coming in there, putting businesses that people
we're gonna
want.
We're going to have a brewery two blocks from my house.
So
you can't have a more accessible.
It really is. Yeah. And then with the bus, you know, and so it's driving prices through the roof, and so we got to try a lot of different granny flats.
Missing middle.
Yeah. So you know, how do you find affordable housing in one of the more expensive neighborhoods in Athens? You know, when I was talking about that, we talked about the people met with the families in Green Hills. Several of them had been renters in Boulevard and wanted to buy and couldn't afford to buy in Boulevard, so they went to Green Hills. Yeah. I think Homewood Hills is going through the roof a little bit now.
I mean, all my friends have moved to Forest Heights or Green Acres.
Forest Heights is what I was thinking.
Yeah, I mean, folks that came up in Athens in the arts and music scene, working downtown, walking to work, you know, once they had their second kid and they needed another bedroom, they just can't afford it, you know, and they can't afford the rents. The rents are through the roof. And so it's had an impact on our creative culture as well, you know. Creativity really thrives on interaction, and when you have that creative class kind of dispersed into the suburbs. I really Athens made its name. That was our golden egg, was our arts and music scene. And I feel like we've lost that, and I don't know if we can get it back.
Tell our listeners each why they should vote for you. And Melissa, you spoke first, so we'll end with Tony. So you start.
Well, I really, really believe in democracy. I believe in participatory democracy. I believe in including all voices at the table and encouraging citizens to be active and informing them. And that's been my main method, is to constantly and consistently reach out, not just to my constituents in my neighborhood, in my immediate social circle, but in all our neighborhoods and beyond, in the environmental community. I'm constantly reaching out to them and letting them know when things are coming down the pipeline and how they can offer their input on issues. And I feel like that's made a difference, having citizens step up, and that's helped guide some policy in recent years. And I'm really proud of that. And it's also been a joy.
Right. And Tony?
Well, I'm going to say that Melissa does work very hard. I appreciate the effort that she puts in. But ultimately, what did you say in the paper, that you're an activist infiltrating the commission? Is that what you said in the flag?
I'm an activist who's infiltrated the system.
Right, right. Well, I'm an activist who, we need a commissioner that can work with the other commissioners to get these things done. You've got to be able to work with the other commissioners. I don't need you to be the best friend of any of the other commissioners, but at some point it's going to come down to selling your side and getting 6 votes. I think that, you know, one of the things I hear constantly is, why are you running against Melissa? Y'all think alike. Well, we do think alike, but we also have different ways of going about. You know, Blake likes to say that I'm the behind-the-scenes guy. I'm not the behind-the-scenes guy. I'm the guy that's going to talk to the other commissioners and try and get 6 votes. So it's not just about how one commissioner votes.
Right. Well, I want to thank both my guests, District 3 Commissioner Melissa Link and Challenger Tony Eubanks. I also want to thank WUGA interns Alex Vandenhoevel and Paul Oshinsky. To hear this show again, visit WUGA.org for a podcast. For questions or comments, visit our Facebook page. This show does not reflect the views of the station. Athens News Matters is a production of WUGA, a broadcast service of the University of Georgia. I'm Alexia Ripley.